Oh, I wanted to say that I am also on Facebook. So if you go to Anderson Music Productions and search that on Facebook, then you'll be able to find me there. I've got some photos of me in action and some of the other things that we do and the equipment that I use. Okay, well, Bob Rule is in the house, and I'm going to go ahead and bring him in at this point. Let's see where he is.
All right, let's see if it's working. Looks like it is here. We're getting ready to start the forum. This is a forum on the Rural Healthcare District candidates.
Okay, let me get rid of this music for you.
Seats right now. The Rural Healthcare District Forum candidates include Kathy Anderson, Wendy Bowman, Michael Pompey, and Mandy Norris are all candidates taking part tonight in this forum. Now, if you notice, there's a fifth name up there on the table, and it says Kristen Rourke. And I think a lot of you know Chris Rourke, but Chris Rourke has officially withdrawn from the race. So what we want to do is make it clear by removing her sign that she has withdrawn. You're going to be voting for two. We've got four up on the stage now, minus the withdrawal. And so don't cast a vote for Kristen. This sounds terrible. Don't cast a vote for Kristen Porter. But if you do, it's not going to count because she has officially withdrawn from the election. Well, thank you to all the people here that came together to make this forum happen. But before we start it, could we give our Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. We've got quite a few empty seats here, probably more, well, about half and half. It's about half empty seats, half. No, maybe it's more people than empty. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is if you want to come to the library and take part in this in person, we've got room for you. Come on out. It's in the Lovett Room of the library here in Pinedale, and you are welcome to attend. Now, also, if you want to submit a question during this forum, this is a little different than the way the county commissioner forums were run. The way we're running the forum is we welcome questions from the public. Dawn Ballou is in the back. She's got her computer on. You can see Dawn there waving at us. And if you have a question, and this could be, you know, two-thirds of the way into the forum, email your question to forum@pinedaleonline.com. Again, that's forum@pinedaleonline.com, and Dawn will bring the question up here to the journalism booth, I guess we'll call it. So please, if you're in the audience and you want to ask a question, we've got note cards. Take it back to Dawn. Dawn is collecting them, and she's going to try to combine it. Five people ask essentially the same question, combine it into one. We encourage you to take part in this forum by submitting your own questions. Please do so. We didn't get as many as we thought we were going to get prior to the forum. Well, sitting at the journalism table, we've got Stephen Crane. He's the editor of the two newspapers here in town, Pinedale Roundup and Sublet Examiner. And very shy and not wanting to be recognized, Joy offered to sitting right next to him to help him out a little bit. I think Stephen's going to do most of the talking. Yeah, she said yes, he will do most of the talking. Then over here in the sound booth, we have Michael Anderson, again, of Anderson Music Productions. If you need a disc jockey for a wedding or anything like that, or some sound set up for a special event, you'll find him on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and do a search on Anderson Music Productions. You'll find him, and he's got a lot of great equipment. In fact, he's doing all the sound for this forum. So, Michael, thank you for helping us out. He's seated right next to his wife, Wendy, so the two of them will keep an eye on the sound. Again, our panelists, we don't want to forget them, Kathy Anderson, Wendy Bowman, Michael Pompey, and Mandy Norris. Four names on the ballot that remain. Two will be elected. And tonight, we're hoping we'll be able to allow you an opportunity to make a wise decision when you go to vote. Well, tell you what, let's Do we have any elected officials in the room that maybe we should acknowledge just quickly? I think we got a sheriff here somewhere. Yeah, there he is, way in the back. Casey Lear, thank you for coming. And I'm just looking to see if we have any other elected officials we just want to acknowledge. We've got candidates in the room here. We've got non-healthcare candidates. And if you want to come and meet some of these candidates, scoot on over here to the Lovett Room in the public library. Well, let me switch things over right now to Stephen Crane. We're going to change the order of who goes first each time we ask a question. And I think, Stephen, is it 2 minutes here for the first round?
2 minutes, but we'll go ahead and start with candidate introductions.
All right. And 2 minutes on the introductions?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start with Kathy Anderson, a little two-minute introduction, and let's hear from you.
Hi. I'm really nervous, as I think most of the other candidates are. None of us like speaking in public. But a little bit about me. I was raised in East Tennessee. I have a bachelor's degree in philosophy, which taught me how to think. I went into the Navy as an officer and was considered what is called an unrestricted line officer. I did a variety of things there. Had a tugboat division, had a family service department. So there was some legal officer in there. There was a line division officer. A variety of things, which means jack of all trades, master of none. Got out of the service, thought I'd pursue some classic studies. That did not go well. Ended up in the private sector running customer service. And then was at the DA's office, the district attorney's office in Knox County, Tennessee. Spent a few years there doing primarily data research as well as case preparation for the felony department. And then 10 years ago, I came out here to take this job. Took a while to find this job. We've been trying for a few years, but been here ever since. I am the coordinator for the Sublette County Treatment Court. A lot of people prefer to call it a drug court. I have a collateral duty as chair of the coordinated care group, which is an attempt to keep all of the social service agencies in the county working together. And sit on the Prevention Coalition, and thought I'd throw my hat in the ring for this because it matters to me what healthcare looks like 5 and 10 years down the road.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. The next one to comment, to do opening comments, Wendy Bowman.
Well, I was born and raised in northern Minnesota a few years ago. I moved around the country quite a bit, working in different construction sites, power plants, nuclear power plants, things like that. I started my health care in 1985 in the Tampa, Florida area, then going to Cincinnati, and then coming out here. I've been involved in health care in the county here for approximately, 20-plus years, since the early 90s. I love Sublette County, and I want to see Sublette County have the very best health care that they possibly can, because I plan on staying here, and I want good health care when I get a little older. I think that there are a lot of concerns, a lot of things that we need to be looking at in Sublette County, and I think the district finances is a big one. So that's probably everything about me.
All right. Thank you very much, Wendy Bowman. Our next candidate with opening statement, Michael Pompey.
I was raised in eastern Wyoming, out in the Black Hills area. My father worked for a power company back there. He was a manager in several different towns. Grew up there, graduated from Newcastle High School, went to the University of Wyoming for 2 years, and graduated from South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, degree in electrical engineering. That took me out of the state to California, working in aerospace there until 1977. At the end of 1977, we moved up here to Big Piney without a job because my other choice was staying in Los Angeles and working there. And I prefer Wyoming, so we moved up here, started out working on appliances, working for an electrical contractor, then working in the energy business with Northwest Pipeline as a technician and a communication specialist. Finally retired about 7 years ago. Been busier now than I was when I was working. But I was on the board 20 years ago. It was a rough time. We didn't have a lot of money, nowhere near the money that we had now. We kept the clinics running, 24 hours EMT service, and doctors available the whole time. So I'm concerned about the direction things are going and trying to get us back on track.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. And if I understand correctly, Mandy Norris, you are an incumbent. You are already on the health care board?
That's correct.
Okay, I believe Mandy is the only one. The other three are first-timers, correct? Okay, so incumbent candidate, Mandy Norris.
I'm Mandy Norris. I'm a lifetime resident of Sublette County. I was raised in Big Piney, graduated from Big Piney High School. After I graduated from high school, I went to Salt Lake and attained my medical assisting certificate, came back to Pinedale and started to work at the Pinedale Clinic, and I was there for 20-plus years. After leaving there, my husband and I managed a bison ranch in Cora. We were out there for 13 years, and now that I'm back in town, I am back into the medical profession. Last year, I completed my certified professional coding certificate, and I am now working again in a medical office. I've also started my home care business, Home to Stay, taking care of elderly patients. So I have a great interest in the health care in Sublette County, and I'm going to run again, hoping to get back in to fight for the health care in Sublette County.
Thank you very much, Mandy Norris. Also, I wanted to point out our timekeeper tonight is Kay Malkowski. She's got a big yellow 30-second sign and a big red stop sign. And so far, I don't think she's had to raise the stop sign, not yet. So there's nothing wrong if you keep your answers a little shorter. We'll just go on to the next question if that happens. Speaking of the next question, let's go over to Stephen Crane and see what he has.
And just a friendly reminder, candidates, to make sure that we're speaking into the microphone for both those in the room and those in the radio listening audience. Thank you. As I touch base with you all, we'll be covering a few main topics tonight as well as a few miscellaneous areas. But for the audience, both here and on the radio, will be, of course, big topic, the CAH. So we'll probably tackle that first and foremost, and probably get more in-depth with the CAH. We'll also be touching base on the budget, of course, as well as some of the public perception issues that seem to be plaguing the healthcare district. So we'll be covering some of the main bases in addition to some of the more miscellaneous. But, of course, as the evening goes on, please do submit more questions as they strike you. Just to start things off, if we could just see by a show of hands who supports the CAH. Anybody? For the radio audience, no hands have gone in the air.
And also, just a little clarification regarding some of our in-house lingo. CAH is Critical Access Hospital. Not everybody knew that.
So with the Critical Access Hospital, we'll go ahead and tackle that first. Clearly at the forefront of many conversations these days, particularly as it relates to the Rural Health Care District. We'll start with you, Kathy Anderson. What is... we'll start with you, Wendy Bowman, apparently. Ms. Bowman, what is your stand on the CAH?
Well, I, at this point in time, I'm not in favor of it. I'm concerned that it's not self-sustaining, that it won't be self-sustaining. And then what happens when we're partway through construction, possibly, and there's not enough money to take care of that? There are 16 critical access hospitals in Wyoming. Three of them are in excellent condition. They're bigger hospitals with surgeries and OB, and they're in areas where the population is a lot higher. There are three at the bottom that are more our size, maybe even a little smaller. But one of the CEOs I spoke with told me that they get an $800,000 a year subsistence, and they're still struggling to make ends meet. That concerns me. Additionally, I don't know what's going to happen with the Sublette Center. Apparently, negotiations have broken down. Hopefully, that they will resume shortly. There are so many other expenses that I'm not sure that we're aware of. I know that the Big Piney Clinic will need some renovations. There's that cost. My understanding is the CT scanner is, I don't want to say outdated, but is an older scanner and would need to be replaced, probably with grants or maybe from the Rural Health Foundation. But I wonder what the monthly cost would be to maintain that. I don't know. I'm concerned about what the district's plan B might be if the critical access hospital isn't passed. And, you know, I don't know, with the election coming up, my other concern is what happens with Medicare with the new presidential election, and who knows what's going to happen with Medicare at that point.
Okay, thank you, Wendy Bowman. Next, Michael Pompey.
My concerns with the CAL are that we got more problems with the clinics and trying to keep them operating with the funds declining as much as possible. The CAL itself will not, from the reports we're seeing and all of the discussions that have taken place, the CAL won't even produce any income until the year 2020. There's a very good possibility that we won't even have enough money to keep the clinics open by then. So we need to concentrate on the way the money is being spent it in the right direction, and if there's cost trimmings, trim those areas that are not going to affect our health care. We've already affected it by losing the after-hours operation of the Big Piney Clinic, which is that has never happened since the district has been going since 1987, I believe. And this is the first time that that has ever been closed down. So I'm very concerned about this. I want the money to go to the right place. Sure, we can keep working on the call and try and get some ideas for it, but we have to keep the clinics going first.
All right, thank you, Michael Pompey. And just again for clarification, caw, in addition to being the sound that a crow makes, is what you get if you pronounce the letters C-A-H. So C-A-H and caw both stands for Critical Access Hospital. Next, Mandy Norris.
I'm here to state that I stand in the middle ground on the caw. I have been very open to all of our discussions and everything, but I have concerns should we get a CAW, and I have concerns should we not get a CAW. But I think right now that we need to start looking into a second plan B, as the CAW's not moving along as planned, and we're going to be in a very deep shortfall here shortly. But I am open to discussions on both sides, and I have been open to discussions on both sides. But right now, I'm going to hold my ground in the middle.
Okay, thank you, Mandy Norris. And for the last person responding to this question, Kathy Anderson.
Thank you. I think my perception is perhaps a little bit different from all three. My emphasis is long-term health care, and my preferences as to how we get there aren't established. The CAW may work, but as Michael said, the income from that is going to be another 3.5 years down the road. The startup costs are high, but there are grants available that can assist with that. My concern also includes the lack of an existing Plan B. The idea was put forth last year, and all of our eggs have gone into that one basket. That's where the focus has been. What I foresee for the district is a long-term plan that will address both the good years as well as the lean years, as well as there is nothing left on the bone years, so that we can provide health care. 15 years ago, this issue was predicted, that the county and the district would run out of money if there were two separate clinics built and maintained at this rate. We no longer have a volunteer emergency management system. It has to be paid. So for me, my focus is going to be the long term. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. You know, here's a little interesting tidbit of information. There's two kinds of hospitals in Wyoming. Now, I've been calling the first kind a real hospital, which is not the correct term. Full service, or the larger hospitals is what I mean. But the cities that have the larger full service hospitals include Casper, Cheyenne, Evanston, Gillette, Jackson, Lander, Laramie, Riverton, Rock Springs, and Sheridan. These are hospitals where you can go have a baby, you can have major surgery done. Now, the communities in Wyoming that have critical access hospitals include Afton and the Basin-Graybull area, Buffalo, Cody, Douglas, Kemmer, Lovell, Lusk, Newcastle, Powell, Rawlins, Sundance, Thermopolis, Torrington, Wheatland, and Warland. So just a little bit of information as to where critical access hospitals presently exist. Let's go back to Stephen Crane.
So with none of you raising your hands in support of the critical access hospital and a few of you alluding to it in your answers, what's your plan B? Based on the financial reports, you have sort of two options, increase revenue somehow or decrease services. Based on the numbers, it appears the healthcare district will go through its reserves in 3 years' time or less. What is your plan B?
And we'll start with Michael Pompey.
Great. I can't say I have a plan B right now. I don't have a good picture of the finances through the district. I need to study the books and find out where the money has been going. There are some recommendations that have been made through the I. Bailey report. Some of those have been taken into account. Others have not. I think there's still some things that can be done as far as cutting the cost in the district. It may get to a point where there's a discussion about the EMS and a study that was made, and one of the strong points that they pointed out, they said that the Sublette County EMS is not sustainable in its present form. So there's going to be some need to look at that, probably raise some rates and see what we can handle there. But being on the outside and not having access to the books, I need to study those books. I need to sit down and find out where the money is going and historically where it's gone. Since 1987, from 1987 to 2005, there was about $18 million available and spent in the district to cover the expenses of the clinics. From 2005 to 2016, there has been over $100 million spent in this district to keep these clinics open. And there's a big problem there. We've got to figure out what happened and try and straighten it out.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Our next respondent, Mandy Norris.
I'm not going to call it Plan B at this point in time. I'm going to say other options. Other options that we're going to have to start looking into is cutting back on the ERs. Unfortunately, it's going to be the other end of the, it'll be Big Piney that feels the blunt end of this again. That's what I'm here to fight for. Big Piney does not deserve to be getting all the cuts all the time, but in all honesty, we're going to have to start looking at more cuts at the Big Piney Clinic. The other options are St. John's have shown interest in wanting to join with our health care, and I would certainly hate to have that happen, but it is options that may have to be looked at.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Next, Kathy Anderson.
In terms of preparing for the future, currently our tax base is 2 mil. We are entitled to request up to 4 mil. Nobody's in favor of raising taxes, but it's there, and it may have to be addressed if we decide that we want to keep health care at the level that we have. Mandy is correct. Cuts are going to have to be made if we don't get more income. The argument for a cost includes the fact that we can be reimbursed and at least move forward in collecting money from the ambulance runs that are taken to either clinic. Currently, the majority of those are not reimbursed under insurance. Other options. The current description of a cough is up here at the Pinedale Clinic. There is an empty, old, decrepit clinic down next to the Marbleton one. I'm not aware that we've looked at possibly putting the cough there. The St. John's possibility, St. John's has indicated that they're not real thrilled with the idea because they're not going to be able to sustain us. The other possibility, currently we're paying rent to the county for 5 facilities, I believe it is, and perhaps we need to look at getting self-sustaining ourselves, purchasing our own property, building what we need, possibly in Daniel, so that everybody has access to the same stuff. Those are some options. They're not a fleshed-out plan B, but they're close.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. And concluding this round, Wendy Bowman.
Well, I think, first of all, we need to tighten our belts. We need to cut spending. I think there's been way too much spending, and I think that the excessive spending, I don't know where it's gone either, like Mike says. And so I think we need to look at that, because, and in addition to that, then we need to find ways to make a little more money. And some of those ways, some of those possibilities are ambulance charges are way below the national average. In this ERG report, it's very specific to ambulance charges locally versus national. So that's one way to maybe pick up a little more. I know it's not a popular thing to have rates go up, but it might be necessary. But then I think we have to cut costs, and I think we need to start at the top. We need to look at salaries. There are some salaries that are way higher than they really need to be, and we need to look at that. I think that maybe another option would be to check with some of the other CAHs, like everybody is saying, you know, check with St. John's, would they take us? What about a CAH having, for example, Kemmer using us as a satellite clinic? I don't know if that's an option, but it's something that maybe could be looked at.
All right, thank you, Wendy Bowman. Let's go back now to Stephen Crane and on to the next round.
And I'm just going to follow up on some of your answers. Speaking in St. John's in particular, they just completed their own study on this very issue, seeing what it would look like if they were the umbrella hospital and the clinics turned into, for all practical purposes, St. John's clinics. It appears that there would be a nominal, maybe $160,000 profit that would bring it into the black. However, it wouldn't be substantial. Locally, there would have to be, folks would have to relinquish local control. It would come under St. John control. Would you be willing to support St. John's taking over if it meant even the board being dissolved locally or relinquishing local control over health care?
Okay.
Did everybody get that? I'm not sure Bob got that, but did everybody else get that?
I was looking at my chart trying to figure out who starts the next round.
Mandy.
Wendy does?
No, Mandy.
Mandy, okay. We don't want to skip over her doing the first round. That's the hard one.
So the question really is, would you support a St. John's takeover if it meant relinquishing local control, even dissolving the local board?
Should we make that a question for all four to go through?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and start this time with Mandy Norris.
I am definitely, definitely not encouraging St. John's to take over this county. That is the worst thing at this point in time that we could do as far as keeping the trust of the general public in the community. If indeed St. John's did come down, we would have to relinquish everything. And that is something that we would probably never see come back to this county. It's very unfortunate. So I am, at this point in time, very, very against it. I am here to fight for whatever we can do in this county to provide our own. We've started out in this. We have to continue with it.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Next, Kathy Anderson will be responding.
I think that we have dug this hole ourselves. We've put ourselves in this position. And I don't usually look to be bailed out of my personal situations. And I don't see Sublette County asking Teton County to bail us out either. We've paid or we've played. We need to pay for it. I don't support St. John's taking us over, even if we do end up $160,000 in the black. But the report that they put out and that was discussed at the board meeting indicated that they're not real interested and that they recommend that we go the call route.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Next to respond, Wendy Bowman.
I would agree that I'm not totally in favor of it, but I'm not ruling it out either. If it's an only option to bail us out at this point, if it's the plan B that has to be, I don't want to lose health care in Sublette County. And if that's what has to happen to maintain our health care, then I guess that's an option. But I, again, would rather see if we could be a satellite from a CAW in one of the towns close to here.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. And next, Michael Pompey.
I am pretty strongly opposed to something like that happening. You wouldn't dissolve the district because St. John's is going to want the tax dollars that are being generated by this district, and those tax dollars would leave here and go into Teton County, and we wouldn't have access to them anymore. And they would control those tax dollars that we have for trying to provide some kind of care. And I can't imagine it going to be any better than what we have had in the past. I think, yes, we do need to figure out some other way first, and I would explore as many possible ways as I can find to keep that from happening. Again, this has been working for a long, long time. And I think there are a lot of issues as far as spending is concerned that need to be addressed and have been excessive. I still think there's a way we can dig us out of this hole, but it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take some hard decisions, and some people aren't going to like it. I've made hard decisions that people didn't like before and had people mad at me, but I'm going to do it trying to keep the medical system going in Sublette County.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. I guess now back to Stephen Crane.
And Ms. Kathy Anderson. Through this CAH process, through these discussions, it's become quite obvious that there is a strained relationship, perhaps is a way to put it, between healthcare district, Sublette Center, and even the county commissioners. How do we get those folks to work together? How do we rebuild the trust that seems to be lacking between those entities?
I'm sorry, was that strained or strange?
I'll let you decide.
Well, to rebuild relationships and trust, first you have to have honesty. And you have to be willing to look somebody square in the eye and say, there's no way I'm signing that, and walk away. You also have to be willing to listen to compromise. It may be a dirty word in politics these days, but the bottom line is, for the good of the county, if the CAW moves forward, you have to have the county commissioners, the Sublette Center, and the district working together. To rebuild the trust with the people, That requires honesty and transparency. A lot of folks don't really care how their health care is run, as long as when they pick up the phone, 911 is there, an ambulance comes, or the doctor is there to see them. So for those of us that do care about making this work, we have to be willing to sit down and say, this is the end goal. And if that's going to be a cost, then that's going to be a cost. This is what the people have said they want. We have to make it work. And basically, if you have to, bring in a mediator and tie them all down to a chair and don't let them even go to the bathroom until they work something out.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Next, Wendy Bowman.
Well, I firmly believe that we need to wait until the new boards are in place before there's any more negotiation about the CAW. I think that right now the district and the sublet center and the commissioners are kind of apart. They're not working together as they should. But I just truly believe that we need to wait until the new boards come in, and then there needs to be some good, honest negotiation. I worry about the sublet center. Like I said earlier, I don't want to see them lose their swing bed compensation. But then if the district does pay them for their swing beds, I'm not sure if that's totally legal. I've heard from two different attorneys. One says it's legal, one says it isn't. So I don't know where that would go. But I just think it needs to be a lot of discussion, a lot of negotiation. And I agree with Kathy that if we need to bring a mediator in, then do it.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Next, Michael Pompey.
One of the biggest concerns I hear in discussing all of this stuff and the mergers and people getting together is we don't trust the board. That's going to be the first priority as far as getting people to trust the board, trust their ideas, trust their figures, their facts, and rebuild that confidence in it. And I think it's important to maintain lines of communication. You may not agree, but you can discuss your disagreements as well as your agreements and try and come up with something that's going to work. I would really like to see a comprehensive healthcare system in the county. Right now, with the way the healthcare district is, we can't afford to help support something else. We need to get our own act together first and get ourselves working well. And then we can approach the other aspects that people want to try and do and try and get cooperation between the other entities and figure out some way we can help out. I know there's got to be ways. Again, I haven't been privy to all of the discussions, so I don't have answers yet, but I hope to find them, and I hope to rebuild the trust in the district to where people will at least listen and still communicate.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. And wrapping it up, Mandy Norris.
When the CAW first came about and the discussion came about with the sublet center, I had my doubts about joining together. Then there's been some meetings between both boards and that. And when the bottom line comes down, I think at this point in time it's best that each go their own way and move forward. It's going to pull one or the other down with one or the other joining. So I think at this point in time it's best that we just go our own ways and move forward to our best interests for each entity.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Stephen Crane.
And we'll sort of naturally segue that into that public perception. Mike, you sort of alluded to it. Others of you have alluded to it, certainly. The public perception most certainly is out there that going back years, that there has been financial mismanagement at the healthcare district. Do you share in that assessment? Why or why not?
All right, Wendy Bowman.
I do. I think that there's been a lot of unnecessary spending, and I think we need to look at where it went. And then the other thing is the call was forecast to cost $6 million, but that was 2 or 3 years ago. And so what are the costs now? And part of that, I believe, should be public information. And so I think, yes, the transparency has not been there, and I think there's a lack of trust for the district.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Next, Michael Pompey.
Would you repeat that, please, Steve?
Absolutely. So echoing that public perception that there is mistrust with the healthcare district, largely based on financial mismanagement, we don't trust their numbers, whatever it may be, do you share in that public perception of mismanagement? Why or why not?
I guess I do. I'm sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there because I was thinking about all the money that has been spent. We have averaged $10 million a year in the last 10 years spent on health care in this county, and it's still not enough. There's something wrong with that. We need to find out what's going on, and I guess fine-tune it to where it's going to work. We're not going to get more money. If you want to, you're going to, yes, there is tax money available. There are additional mill levies that could be presented, but those have to be put up for a vote of the public. And unless we can build a trust in the public, there's a strong possibility, a very strong possibility, that will not happen. It's very difficult to get any additional taxes through, and unless we can show a definite need, we're going to have to live within the means we have now. And I firmly think that there's a way to do that. There are a lot of increases that have happened with the federal requirements as far as medical records, digital records, increased software to manage this stuff, increased paperwork that the doctors have to do. So I understand that there's increased expenses, but we need to figure out some way to be able to trim those anyway.
Thank you very much, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
Public trust, how do you gain it? Our current board, as it stands right now, has had our books open to everybody in the public. It's very disheartening at the meetings to see we have meetings with nobody in the public. Nobody comes forth to find out what is really out there. I really, really encourage people to come out. Look at the books. It's on our website. It's open. Please allow us to gain the trust of the public again. Our books are open to the public, as are our meetings.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Kathy Anderson.
Mike is right that it would be very hard to get an additional mill levy passed to increase that income. But in the meantime, emergency services is losing $1 million a year. So you want to know where some of the money's going? It's going to haul people to the clinics via ambulance. As for the books being open, they are open. To make them easier for people to see, they probably all ought to be out on the website, though definitely the budgets are. In terms of transparency, we need to start using the media such as Facebook, though yes, the healthcare district does have a Facebook page, but very few people ever look at it, share it, or comment on what they are publishing. There is a monthly newsletter that the district puts out. There are monthly reports that are provided at the meetings that nobody attends. Some of the transparency has to be people willing to look and listen, and we're all at fault for that. I don't fault the district for trying to reach people. They might do it a little bit better, but not so that they're hiding anything. I'm sorry, I don't think that's the case. I think they're honest people that have been trying to do a good job, trying to meet champagne tastes with a beer budget.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. It's the first applause we've heard tonight. All right. Just want to comment to our radio audience that I am seeing a lot of people turning questions in. I met with Don Ballou and Stephen Crane a few hours ago, and we're all looking at each other saying, what are we going to do? Nobody sent in any questions. And now I'm looking at Joy's holding in her hand. I think we've got an abundance of them. But you can. Don's got a bunch in the back. Remember, here in the room, take your questions to the back and give them to Don Ballou. For those of you listening on KPIN radio here in Pinedale, or anywhere in the county for that matter, just go ahead and use email. It's forum@pinedaleonline.com. Again, that's forum@pinedaleonline.com. Don will pick it up on her laptop computer, and you can submit your questions that way. Let's go back to Stephen Crane.
And we'll go ahead and throw in a miscellaneous question, pull back a little bit, get out of the trenches a little bit. How do you define what the rural health care district is and how it affects the citizens of Sublette County? What role do you see it playing?
Okay, Michael Pompey.
Original charter for the rural health care district was to provide 24-hour service 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They were not required to have doctors available during the day for people to see, but they have provided the doctors because the doctors and the doctor's staff are the ones that support that 24-hour service. The money that was available through tax dollars was paid to the doctors for a contract that said, okay, you provide 24-hour service and you run the clinics. The clinics are provided for you to use and see patients, and you take in the income. We have changed that. We now run the clinics ourselves, we pay the doctors, and we take in the income. That has really changed the picture as far as how the health care is managed in this county. We won't be able to go back to having doctors run it and doctors provide the 24-hour service. We have two or three providers in each clinic providing 24/7 service, and they got burned out. And they worked here. Sorry, Doc. But it was very hard. They worked very hard. It's hard to find people nowadays that are willing to put in that same kind of dedication. I'd love to do it. But it's going to be difficult to try and maintain that, but I think it's very important that we need to have that service in the county. We've had it for 25, 30 years. I'd sure hate to have that go away just because we can't spend the money properly.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Next, Mandy Norris.
I define health care in Sublette County as having clinics open 24/7, 7 days a week. I would like to see it be very equally treated so that both the south and the north end of the county get the same treatment. My other goal is to go out and search to see how we can bring more patients into our clinics. I really hate to see people using out-of-town facilities when we have awesome facilities here. We have some of the greatest doctors here, and it really hurts me to see that people seek out outside of our area. So my goal right now is to research and see how we can provide more health care in Sublette County.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. And next will be Kathy Anderson.
It would be nice to think that we could provide the exact same services all over the county with the amount of money that we're making, but it's not realistic. Data drives dollars. And the south end of the county only has 40% of the population. So equal, separate but equal, is not a concept that is going to work. We've been attempting to make it work for 10 years now, and we are spending way too much money in trying to meet this, in my mind, unreasonable expectation. I know that'll offend a lot of you, and I'm sorry, but we cannot keep spending at this rate trying to keep everything equal.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. And next, Wendy Bowman.
I think it's unfair that, just like EMS, whenever there are cuts to be made, EMS seem to be first all the time. They were either cut personnel or they were cut wages. I know one gal who is no longer there that said that her paycheck was cut by 50%, and I don't think too many other people within the district will say that. I think that it's unfair that Big Piney always is the first to get cut as far as between Pinedale and Big Piney. I would like to see some way to reopen the ER in Big Piney, and I know that's a cost issue, but if there's some way we can look at that and get Big Piney's ER back open after hours, that would be ideal.
Wendy Bowman. And have we gone all the way around yet? Okay. Didn't want to have you go twice. Let's go back to Stephen Crane.
Given that one of the primary functions of the board is budgetary in nature, what is your own personal or professional experience with budgets?
All right, we're going with Mandy Norris now.
A balanced budget is my goal. I would like to see this district crack down a little bit more. I hate to see the spending go, and I hate numbers in red. So while I have been on the board in the past here, I was always the biggest, or how should I say that? I was always the one creating the most issues over the budget. It seems like I always wanted to cut here and there, and I kind of got shut down at times. So my biggest thing is to see if we can balance the budget and stick with it. I hate when we have to get into it. When we set the budget, I'd like to stick with that budget that's been set.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Next, Kathy Anderson.
Well, in terms of personal budget, I have never operated in the red. In terms of budgets that I've overseen, they have varied tremendously over the past years. But the past 10 years that I've been here with Sublette County, I have consistently returned money at the end of each fiscal year to the general fund. I believe that when you are responsible for taxpayers' money, you should treat it as your own, as precious as your own, and not spend it unnecessarily. You should plan, budget, and make sure that you're going to have enough money to cover down the road when bad things happen, so that whether it be an increase in the number of urinalysis that have to be done in the drug court, or, sorry, that was aimed at somebody at the back, you still have enough money in your budget to do that, and you're responsible enough to give whatever you don't need back to the taxpayers.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Next, Wendy Bowman.
I've gained some experience in budgeting and financial management in probably three or four little businesses that I've owned. Keeping them in the black can be stressful. I also think that we need a cushion, and I know that, for example, the commissioners and probably the school districts years ago, excuse me, when they saw the crunch coming, they were putting money away. They were saving money. And I don't know that our district did that. I think that that's important. The commissioners had the foresight to put all kinds of money away, and the district maybe didn't.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey.
Well, I'm with Kathy. When I do my budget, if I run out of money, I can't get anything else. I have to wait till the next paycheck comes in. Not like the federal government where we can print money and keep going and borrow it and keep going. And I feel that same responsibility with the tax dollars that the county has entrusted to these districts. you spend what you get. If you don't have enough, then you figure out a way to trim your budgets so that you can stay in the black. You don't run in the red. I have worked in the industries, private industry, and it's the same way. I've been project engineers working on multi-million dollar projects. You have these projects, you have so much money to spend. If you run over, then you're going to lose your job. You don't do that. And I think that's very important in trying to keep a balanced budget with the district and live within your means.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris, you started. Okay, my list is not in the same order that they are up here, and I'm scratching my head, so thank you for the clarification. Steve?
If elected, you'll be facing a $3.3 million deficit next spring. Where do you start cutting? What areas would you begin in terms of looking at to start covering that deficit or minimizing that deficit?
Okay, Kathy Anderson.
Well, currently the proposed budget through the end of June of next year indicates that the reserve funds and cash on hand will be used to make up the deficit. What we have got to do between now and when the budget gets put together again is decide what cuts we're willing to live with. Are we willing to live without 24/7 coverage at both ends of the county? Can the 24/7 coverage be switched back and forth between both ends of the county? I'm not in favor of reducing EMS services, so how do we make the EMS services a little bit better? That has to be a cost or another label that will get us paid. Otherwise, anybody that requests an ambulance needs to understand that they need to go to a real hospital. Sorry, real is also the word I use, Bob. So in terms of cuts, it has to be in services. It has to be in staff. It has to be in salaries. We also need to look at how much we're spending to recruit and retain people. It costs an awful lot to recruit a new doctor, and we just cannot afford to be spending our money with a revolving door with physicians.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Next, Wendy Bowman.
Well, Kathy said exactly what I think. I agree 100% with her. But I think we need to look at wages. We need to look at salaries. The I. Bailey report was very clear with some of the cuts that they felt needed to be made. Some of them were made, but some of them weren't. Some of them were pretty much ignored. So I think, first of all, I would look at salaries. I don't want to see cuts. I want to see the clinics in full operation. But, you know, if we have to take a little cut in pay and still have a job 5 years from now, I think it's well worth it.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey.
I, too, agree that the first place to look at are look at salaries and reduction in staff, perhaps of non-essential areas. I don't want to get involved in causing any cuts in the medical profession, the medical staff that we have, those are the ones that provide the actual patient care. We need to try and do what we can to protect that. Yes, we've had a revolving door. We've lost 7 doctors in the last few years. And why, I don't know. Yes, we have to recruit new doctors. There's a recruitment fee, and then there's a signing bonus and things like that. Some of the doctors we have had to pay for patient records. I don't think that's necessary. Any patient that wants their records to stay at the clinic can request that, I believe. But the salaries are going to have to be looked at first. And the overhead expenses, those are the ones. And we're not going to be able to find $3 million. We're going to have to dig into the reserves that we do have, I'm sure. But it's going to be a process, a long process, to try and trim this stuff and get it back on track again. And, again, I need to be able to review what's been done and get a better idea of where the cuts can be made.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
When it comes to cutting the budget this last year, I'm telling you, this board really looked into it and it hit it hard. And I really, really, really hate to see us have to continue that way, but budgets have to be met and it's going to be a real shortfall. The other thing is, the next step we're going to have to do is start looking at services being cut, and that's another last thing that I do not want to see. I think we have great services here, and I would like to see them continue. But again, I have to agree with the other three that we've got to really start looking deeper into budgets, salary, et cetera. But I really hate to see it cut into our services.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. One little itty-bitty detail I've overlooked at the top of the hour. You're listening to KPIN Pinedale. 101.1 FM. Okay, I've done my station ID, Stephen.
Mandy, as you mentioned, there have been cuts already. As everybody knows, the 24-hour emergency room down in Marbleton, Big Piney Clinic, is no longer. Folks down that way are certainly worried about a continued decline in services. How do you reassure them, or do you, that that will not continue?
Wendy Bowman.
That's a really good question. I don't know how to assure them it's going to get any better, but I do want to see the ER opened in Big Piney, and I don't want to see Big Piney lose their clinic and their health care. That's something that I would fight for, and I'm very tenacious. Some people say hard-headed. I don't agree with that, but it bothers me to lose Big Piney. Big Piney deserves to have the same care that we give in Pinedale.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey.
I, too, am very disturbed about the decline in services in Big Piney. Big Piney may have about 40% of the population, but as far as the tax income, they are more close to 50%. In what they contribute, and they need their fair share as far as keeping the clinic open and keeping the clinic going. We really need to start focusing on non-essential services that we can trim and improve our bottom line that way.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Next, Mandy Norris.
This is a really, really tough, hard sell to the people in Big Piney. It's not reassuring to them. It's hard to reassure them, but somehow we've got to gain their trust and promise them that we are working to do our best to provide them with the health care that they deserve. They pay equal taxes just like we do in Pinedale. So I'm out there to try and reassure them that I will do all I can do to provide the health care down there equally.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Stephen.
So,
Kathy.
If you want me to skip this one.
No, I don't.
It's a hot one, but.
I don't want you to skip it. My brain isn't working all the time.
Okay. Reassure, fair, and deserve. Those are loaded emotional words. And unfortunately, we cannot continue using emotion to make decisions. I think the approaches that we have to take have to be practical, have to be cost-effective, and they are going to hurt everybody in the county. Whether it be somebody has to drive further for care or somebody doesn't get the service that they want in the county, the data has to drive the decision. And while I would love to sit up here and say Big Piney must continue to have the exact same services that are available in Pinedale, or Pinedale must continue to have the exact same services that are in Big Piney, I don't believe that it's honest. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot of this county, and it's not going to be fun.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy's already gone. All right, I'm back in phase. Stephen.
And some of you have talked about this already a little bit. I'm sort of combining a few different audience questions into one, so pardon me if I butcher that attempt. But the question really is, as mentioned, there are doctors that have left. The challenge is always to keep the revolving door from revolving. We want quality health professionals to stay here. You have to compensate accordingly. There's also, of course, the ongoing perception administration's paid too high. Other folks that are doing the proverbial dirty work are not paid enough. There is certainly a pay salary required to get competent, quality health professionals working for the healthcare district. Where do you find that balance? How do you find that balance of finding savings and cutting salaries while maintaining salaries that will retain quality health professionals?
Michael Pompey.
That's very difficult to do. We are in tough times now, and I think everybody's going to have to share in some way with tightening the belt. Again, we've discussed working as a non-essential first, starting at the top, that's the low-hanging fruit, and then figure out some way to work with the professionals if necessary to reduce or increase after-hours calls and not having so many professionals so that we don't have too much call. And I hate to say it, but it's a difficult situation, and you have to look at all aspects. You start first at the non-essential and work your way down.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
I feel that this district offers great benefits to the physicians coming in. I feel like we offer them a super package when we go out and recruit. I don't know that we could offer any better at this point in time, and I think the doctors that have come here, I hope that you're happy with what we've offered them, and I hope that we can continue to offer those things without having to cut a lot out of that. But the other thing that we're going to have to look at sooner or later is capping the physician salaries, and I hope that that doesn't take the glory out of coming to Sublette County, but we do have to look at some of those cuts once in a while. So.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Kathy Anderson.
Basically, you're arguing about salary versus recruitment versus retention. When we're recruiting, the biggest selling point we have is this incredible county and the lifestyle that you get when you move here. That has to be part of the selling of the package. That way, even though physicians starting out tend to leave after about 3 years, 36 months is the average. Well, we've had a lot, and that is what we average, but only 70% of those, actually not only, 70% of those left. The ones that have stayed have averaged 63 months, but we have a couple of big outliers there, New Doc and Dr. Kappelman. The recruitment has to be the starting point. The retention has to be part of that. It is hard to retain people in this county who don't want to live here. And this is a place that requires you to love it and be willing to live within its lifestyle. Salaries are within the expected range, as are the benefits packages. I'm not sure that there's a lot of room to cut for salaries. So we need to start at the ground up by who we bring in, how we go about keeping them.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy Bowman.
Well, Kathy, you stole my thunder. I agree again. We were very fortunate to get somebody like Dr. Kappenman. All we had to do was offer him a fly rod, and he was happy. But I think, too, that we probably can't offer much more than we already are. In fact, I think we've offered maybe too much, and we're going to have to cut back on some of that. I think the $70,000 or $75,000 stipend interest-free loan is probably very substantial, and I'm assuming that that's probably going away. But I think that we need to make sure we offer them enough, but not too much. It's just finding a balance.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey, or did you start? I'll get this figured out before we're done here yet.
All right. I'll get it on the last question.
Yeah, the last one I'll get it right. Yeah.
Let's talk EMS for a moment. A few changes have been made in recent years, sort of loss of some of the volunteer EMTs. Some have argued that those changes have resulted in the loss of a lot of institutional knowledge, particularly related to the county, the people, even the geography of how to get someplace. What's your take on the current state of EMS in the county?
We'll start with Mandy Norris.
I think that we have one of the most outstanding EMS services that you could ever ask for. I think that the staff that we have right now is so qualified that it's going to take a long time to ever not appreciate them. We have paramedics. We have EMT 1s, 2s. At this point in time, I would hate to see any more cuts done to the EMS because, as I say, we have a very, very outstanding EMS.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Kathy Anderson.
Well, as most of you know, the head of the EMS department has decided that a ship somewhere near Belize is the best way to go. And he is leaving in the next month or so. And I understand the district has interviewed and possibly made a decision, but that hasn't been publicized yet, so I've been told. Hopefully, the institutional knowledge will continue with that. But that department, again, is losing $1 million a year. That can't continue. We either have to figure out how to go back to volunteers, which unfortunately would make, without trying to be offensive, the service is a little more questionable. It takes a special person to say they're going to be willing to go out for free and respond to calls 24/7, 365. So I don't see cutting EMS. The only thing that makes sense is to figure out how to make it pay.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy Bowman.
Well, EMS I have a soft spot in my heart for EMS. I was involved in EMS as an EMT for over 20 years here, and I've seen a lot of changes. Some good, some not so good. EMS is vitally important here. It's basically a priority because no matter what happens with the CA or without the CA, EMS has to be there. We can't lose our EMS, and I feel that the EMTs are, and just in visiting with some of them, they're concerned about their jobs. They shouldn't have to be concerned about their jobs. They should feel confident in their jobs. They should be the last people to be cut service-wise or financially. They work their tails off. I don't know how many of you would like to be out in the middle of the winter at 2 o'clock in the morning pulling somebody out of a car. It's not fun. I will support EMS 110%, and I'll fight for EMS. I think that that department has probably been misused, and not by the folks of Sublette County, but by the district itself, because that's the first place to get cut all the time, and that's just unfair. They have an exorbitant amount of training. It's unreal. And even since I've left, they put in a minimum number of hours. There were state tests. There are skills checks. There are this equipment that is just so beyond what it used to be when I first started. And EMS needs to be promoted, if nothing else. I mean, we need to keep our EMS. It's vitally important. And actually, the SafeTech Solutions, there's a lot of good information in there. It's specific about how much the current service likes the director they have and what a good job he's done, and I have to stop.
All right, the red sign went up.
I wasn't done either.
We probably catch that on closing statements, if need be. Michael Pompey.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. The EMS is on the front line of our emergency service, and they're the ones that get the people to the clinics and get them there to where they can be taken care of and as quickly as possible. The SafeTech report does have a lot of information in it. They did a large study on it and have a lot of suggestions that needs to be looked at and find out how those suggestions can be applied without hurting the EMTs themselves. We do have the finest EMTs that anywhere. We have had the finest trauma centers in rural America for many, many years. Because of the dollars that, I don't know, I'm still having trouble deciding whether it's misspent or misappropriated or what. Because of the dollars that we've had, and it's been affecting the EMS, it's been affecting the people that are doing it. We want to try and minimize that, but try and streamline it. SafeTech is talking about increased costs in, or increased charges in ambulance services. I don't know how that will apply, especially when you're looking at Medicare and stuff like that. It's difficult. But we really need to take a look at that report to start with.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. You started. All right. I just wanted to make sure. Let's go back to Stephen Crane.
And I might do a fourth quarter changeup. In terms of time, I want to get through some of these audience questions. I've certainly incorporated some as we've gone on, but I want to make sure that I get some of these. If we could do 30 seconds for the answers. I promise I pick questions that 30 seconds should be doable, so don't feel overwhelmed. And I believe we're starting with Kathy Anderson.
That's what my chart says.
Perfect.
Next time I'm going to put the chart in the same order of the people. Maybe we'll get it right.
Do you know what the number of visits are to each clinic, and of those visits, what percentage of walk-in patients the clinics don't get reimbursed for?
No, I'm sorry. I do not have that number.
And that was Kathy Anderson.
See, that was easy.
That was quick. Wendy Bowman.
I have it here somewhere, but I think it's there was a bar chart, and I believe, I don't remember the numbers on there, but there was a bar chart in one of these handouts that was specific to that. But I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
Wendy Bowman. Next, Michael Pompey.
I'd have to refer to my files, too. I don't have it off the top of my head.
All right, Michael Pompey. And finally, Mandy Norris.
Well, I haven't. In 2016, this is estimate, for the Pinedale emergency visit, it's expected to be around 144. After hour visits is 624. Radiology and x-ray is 1,752. Radiology CAT scan is 528. Ultrasounds is 28. Laboratory is 10,472. Marbleton ER visits is 48. After hour visits, 348, and I'm getting stopped.
Do you know a total number of patients out of all those, or is it broken down simply into the individual categories?
It's in individual categories right now.
Do we know the percentage of those that do not reimburse for those services?
I don't have that.
Okay.
With that, do any of you know sort of where the biggest holes are? I know it was talked about that we're losing $1 million in ambulance services of folks that aren't reimbursing for those. What do you see as sort of the biggest areas where money is going down the drain, as it were?
Well, I would agree. It's probably in the ambulances, because when they take someone to the clinic, if they don't go on, they don't get paid. So I think possibly, quite probably, the ambulance services are a big drain, but they're very necessary.
That was Wendy Bowman.
And it's also been proposed bringing third-party folks in to take over some services. I'm not sure, since it's a county-owned facilities, whether that might be a solution in terms of whether it's janitorial, billing, administrative. Do you see fishing those out to third parties as being a potential solution, or at least a help in the revenue problem facing the district?
I'm not sure I get what you're just doing
here. So given that at the very basic level, county facilities, the clinics are county facilities, whether it was bringing in county maintenance folks to come in and clean those clinics, or fishing out other duties within the district to third parties, if that could be a cost-saving measure?
It would be worth looking at. You know, whether it would be a cost-saving measure or not, I don't know.
Anybody else?
And that was Wendy Bowman. Yeah, anybody else?
Oh, well, I didn't have to answer that.
I have one thing to add to that. I think a lot of people don't understand that you can't just outsource your stuff to anybody anymore with the HIPAA laws. So just not anybody can come into the clinics and clean. It has to be certain people. I also feel like maybe we ought to look at maybe outsourcing the billing into a bigger company.
That was Mandy Norris. Anybody else?
I think in this area, there's a lack of services that you could draw from, so it's very difficult to find somebody else that would be able to perform those duties.
Michael Pompey. Again, anybody else want to go? Kathy Anderson.
Lack of people to provide services. For example, the lab work, that can't be done anywhere else in the county. Does that mean we're going to pack it up, ship it off, and not get results for however long it takes? There are things that we just cannot cut if we're going to have the minimum.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Stephen?
And another question is related to mental health. Do you feel that the county should be involved in mental health, even if it means subsidizing those services?
Anybody want to grab that?
I'll take that first, because that's sort of part of what the drug court's involved with. The county does need to help subsidize. It's mental health. It has to do with chemicals in the brain. Yes, I feel that providing a minimum of mental health services in Sublette County, specifically a safe place for the 72-hour hold, needs to be part of any structure that we consider.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Anybody else want to take a shot at that? Wendy Bowman.
I agree. We do need some help with finances for mental health, and it's an important part of our area.
Anybody else? Mandy Norris.
I think that subsidizing mental health care in Sublette County is very important at this point in time, as I see it falling through the cracks in many ways. I was just involved in a hearsay conversation in another office, medical office, this week, that mental health care is falling through the cracks everywhere. And this was actually out of town, and it's my real concern that if we don't help out with the mental health in our county, then perhaps in the next county, it's not going to be available either.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Michael, do you want to go?
I think this is an area that has been farmed out to other locations, Yeah, frankly, right now, we're looking at trying to break even with what services we have. We can provide or find areas or other locations that can help us out with those things rather than actually have to do it ourselves. We need to look at that first.
Thank you, Michael Pompey.
Thank you. And we'll return to some structure. Do we remember who was or should be first?
I think my note says the next formal round will begin with Michael Pompey.
Okay, we'll go ahead and begin with Michael.
Try to get rid of it.
How do you define, this is another audience question, how do you define a non-essential position?
Something that isn't directly related to the healthcare. You have your lab people, you have your nurses, you have your doctors, and then on the other end you have the billing area, the housekeeping area, the maintenance area, administration, finance. I would say those are not as essential. It's hard to say they're non-essential. They are not as essential as the healthcare professional.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
I have to agree, non-essential is not exactly non-essential to people. I think that's kind of a degrading statement to people if you're telling them that they're non-essential. But I think if you had to make cuts, I would make cuts with people who didn't hold licenses, certificates, certifications, etc. That way to cut out. If you had to really start crunching people that did not hold a license, etc.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Kathy Anderson.
I agree with Mandy. The phrase non-essential is rude. And I don't think that rudeness needs to be a part of this. However, as she also said, looking at those that hold the licenses and those that provide the direct service has to be the first line. Just like EMS has to be the very first line, then the nurses, the doctors, the nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, the techs, those are the ones with the hands-on. Those are the ones that the public sees. They are second level after EMS. The ones that don't hold the certifications, like Mandy said, tend to be the maintenance and the housekeeping. But again, federal law is saying that certain people have to exist within the system. So I'm not sure that non-essential is a real word in this situation.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy Bowman.
I agree. I think there's certain levels of essential, but everybody within the district is essential to some point. And like with EMS, they clean their own barn, their own ambulance barns. You know, they don't have anybody in there doing that for them. But there is really no one that's completely non-essential, I don't think.
All right. Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Stephen.
Next question is another audience question. Do you have any idea how much it costs to care for a critically ill patient? And do you know how much a hospital gets reimbursed versus Sublette County and why?
Mandy Norris.
And we'll go 2 minutes on these.
I don't know. The cost of medical care depends on what type of critical care you're talking about. Each case has their own scenario. So I honestly can't answer the cost of a critical care case. You would have to take each individual. I know that we absolutely do not get reimbursed as, say, St. John's would, such as we do not get reimbursed for emergency care in our clinics because they are not, quote-unquote, hospital emergency rooms. So we lose out on a lot of that kind of income not being a hospital-type reimbursement.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Kathy Anderson.
I have to agree with Mandy again on this. It depends entirely. Are you talking about somebody that has been in a coma for over a month and you're not sure if they're going to wake up? Or are you talking about somebody that's having a heart attack and or somebody who's having heart palpitations that won't quit. It entirely depends upon the case and depends on how long they're in and what sort of services they require. I don't think that's an answerable question, Stephen. I'm sorry.
How about the difference in reimbursement? Hospital versus Sublette County and why?
Sublette County clinics are reimbursed as doctor's offices, just like going to a single doctor office. That's the reimbursement level. Going to a hospital, you have higher reimbursement levels because of the level of treatment provided. Does that answer your question?
It answers the audience question, yes it does.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy Bowman?
There's not much more I can say. That's exactly the way I feel. I don't know what a specific critical care case will cost because it's all going to depend on what tests they do, whatever they do to the individual patient. So I can't determine. There's no set rate.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey.
Yeah, no, I don't have those numbers either. I do know that it's been a big problem that has always been ongoing as far as doctor's office is concerned, and they're not reimbursed for the costs of what it takes to take care of patients because Medicare and insurance companies don't take a lot of things into account. But I can't tell you how much it is.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Stephen.
And we'll go with another audience question. Despite the fact that none of you raised your hand in asking about support for the CAH, what advantages do you see for a patient to patient care with a CAH in place?
Kathy Anderson.
If the CAH was in place, one could go ahead and treat somebody that has congestive heart failure where you need to get the fluids away from the heart. You don't agree with that. I'm sorry, sir. If you need observation to determine if there's a concussion, that also would be an option. If you need 2 or 3 days to recover from something, that would also be an option. Those are the types.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy Bowman?
I think if a patient needs just some overnight care, that would be an option. And I think that if someone comes in and goes into the ER, they and then ends up going into the critical access hospital, then the district will get paid per the critical access hospital rates. But I still feel that there's no guarantee that the critical access hospital is going to be financially secure. I don't know if it's going to be self-sustaining, and what happens if it isn't?
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey.
Well, your question is, if the critical access hospital could take care of the person, what is the advantage? The advantage is you don't have to take them out of the county. They don't have to travel quite as far. And they can be stabilized quicker. And they can remain in this area without having to be transported by ambulance or any other way to a place further away and take the additional risk of causing additional trauma or problems with their care.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
A cost to me in this area is just for basic services to treat dehydration, somebody that needs just overnight care, observation, etc. But I do want to say one thing, that I think that the whole aspect of the CA is a misconception by a lot of people. I think the understanding of a CA here is stating that Sublette County will provide for critical care patients. I want to clarify that the critical access hospital is not for critical care. When they have critical care, they will be sent somewhere else. So I feel like a critical care access here would be for dehydration, et cetera, overnight observation type stuff.
Thank you, Mandy Norris. Stephen.
And this is going to be a mouthful, bear with me. Dramatic changes in U.S. healthcare over the last 15 years include third-party payer contracts, federally mandated electronic medical records, increase in the price of healthcare, increase in medical malpractice, certainly an increase in technological advances, and yet the sentiment is still out there, why can't we run the clinics like we used to in the good old days? What, if elected, would be your answer to that?
Wendy Bowman.
You want to go first?
What would be my answer to why can't we go back to the way things used to be? Progress dictates that we can't. Times change, medical care changes. It's become more evolved into a much better level of care because of the equipment we have and that kind of thing. So I guess that would be my answer. I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Michael Pompey.
I, too, don't think we can go back. The government has gotten their finger into the medical profession and trying to tell the doctors how to do their job, and if you want the money, you got to play the game. I would dearly love to go back to where doctors were running the clinics and we just provide a contract with them so that we could pay them. You know, we got a lot more money. Before, we were paying them around $17,000 a month. We could pay them $50,000 a month and still be able to, they should be able to staff their clinics and provide 24/7 coverage. But with all of the medical records requirements and the other things that the government is requiring, that makes it pretty much impossible.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
I have to tend to agree with everybody. There's just no way of going back. You have to push forward. There's too many rules and regulations, and you have to follow those guidelines. And unfortunately for our small community, we can't go back.
Thank you, Mandy Norris and Kathy Anderson.
Well, that's probably sounding like the choir, but no, we can't go back to when doctors worked 70 hours a week to make sure that everybody in their area or their office was treated the way we all want to be treated. House calls don't happen anymore. Now, physicians want a life outside of work, expecting them to work way over 40 hours. The young ones that are coming in aren't interested in that type of work. We can't go back to that. We can't go back to when, as I believe Michael said, the government didn't have their finger in every part of the healthcare pie. We didn't, or telling us how much we can charge. No, we can't go back to the way it was as much as we would like to.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson.
And we have two more questions before we go into closing statements. I want to get these two again from the audience. We'll start with one quick one by a show of hands. Anybody having a second thoughts on the CAH? Nobody having second thoughts on the CAH.
Yeah, no hands went up.
So we'll go ahead and finish with this one. There's been a lot of talk about the problems plaguing the rural health care district. What do you see as the best aspect or aspects of healthcare here in the county?
Michael Pompey.
We don't want to lose it. We want to make sure that we can maintain the care that the public needs. The hard part is going to be making it affordable.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. Mandy Norris.
Problems plaguing the district. I wished it was that simple. Until I got on the board, I thought a lot of things were being overlooked. But I'll tell you what, when you're on that board, there's a lot of things to go through, and there's a lot of things that are not overlooked. So people who think it is easy to be on this board, it's not. So I would like to continue working through our problems and hopefully we can dissolve some of the problems that we have. It's not an easy task, I'll tell you.
And if I may follow up, Mandy, what is the best part of health care in Sublette County?
I love health care.
All right, thank you, Mandy Norris. Kathy Anderson is next.
I think the best aspects of what we have is that we know the health care providers. When you're in a large town, you might have a doctor in a large office. The chances of seeing the same doctor twice in 1 year are not real good. They're going to have a large practice. They're going to have it managed by somebody like Melinda. They're going to have a finance officer like Lorraine. You're not going to get the opportunity to run into them at Ridley's or have your kid on the same team as their kid. The best aspect of what we have in Sublette County are the people providing the health care.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Next, Wendy Bowman.
I agree with that. The doctors and the nurses and the EMTs have been so dedicated. I think it's the dedication of the folks that actually administer the health care. We'll never go back to Doc Johnston, who was probably more dedicated than anyone. But I truly believe the doctors and the nurses and the EMTs are the most dedicated people in the area. Wyoming's so big and wild, and it's not easy to find people that are that dedicated.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Stephen?
We'll go to closing statements.
I think we're ready to go to closing statements. After the closing statements, I'm going to give a little bit of information about how to vote, where to find a sample ballot, and so forth. So stick around shortly thereafter, and we'll answer a few questions of how do you do something about what you heard about tonight. Stephen?
I missed that, actually. I was talking in the journalism corner.
No, I was just saying I'm going to give some information on how you go about voting, when the polls are open, this kind of thing, where to find a sample ballot.
Yes, of course. The sample ballots are Pinedale online. In terms of where to go, Pinedale online.
And go to the upper right-hand corner. You'll see an American flag in a box. Click on that little American flag in the box that says sample ballots. And then you'll see all eight of our precinct ballots that you can download the one that's yours and look at it. And then under that, you'll actually see another one, which is the lodging tax ballot, but that's only for people who reside in the town limits of Pinedale.
And perhaps I missed my segue. With that, the newspapers are also going to be publishing next Tuesday and next Friday an election guide. So we'll be having side-by-side Q&As with three of the races, the commissioners, Rural Healthcare District, and Sublette School District number 9. We will also include voting information in there, which is probably, again, the cue that I missed the first time around. Thank you, Bob.
Well, we're getting it done here. And also the Chamber of Commerce has organized two more forums tomorrow night at the high school auditorium starting at 7 o'clock p.m. They will have the county commissioners. And then doing it again down in the Big Piney area at the Fine Arts Auditorium at 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 3rd. KPIN will broadcast both of those and also all three forums. We will be providing Don Ballou at Pinedale Online with a recording. And for anybody that wants to hear the forum, that weren't, of course, if you're not hearing me say this, you won't know that you need to do this. But tell your friends, if you missed the forum, it'll be on Pinedale Online. You can listen to a recording of it.
And we still have closing statements.
All right. And we still have closing statements. And if my little chart is correct, the next person to start is Mandy Norris. Did you start last time? Okay, then back over here to Kent. Maybe next time we do this, I'll figure out a better way to keep track. Kathy Anderson will start with closing statements. Sorry.
I know that I am not a longtime resident, and I won't even be considered a local for another 10 years. But I plan on being here for not only another 10 years, but another 20 to 30, God willing. The CAW is an option. and it's one that has been pushed and pushed hard, and it has some benefits. It also has some drawbacks. What I want to see is the Rural Healthcare District Board put together a plan that puts us back into the black as quickly as possible, and then plans for the future. I want the decisions that we make to be based on data. I want the approaches to be practical, and I want to make sure that we stay dedicated to the progress that we have made. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy Anderson. Wendy Bowman is next.
Well, I want to finish my little EMS thing that Kay cut me off on. We have some of the best EMTs anywhere. If you look in the SafeTech documentation, it's very specific about the high level of care they can give. But yet we've lost a lot of EMTs over the last few years, and the question is why. Some of them have left because of the wages. Their wages were cut a lot. And some of them left because of the political atmosphere that has been surrounding EMS. So, EMS has lost. Their budget changed from 2013 to of almost $2.7 million to this last year at $1.5 million. That's a huge cut, and I don't think any department in the district has taken anything quite that large. They haven't been hit that hard. I agree. I want health care to continue. I want the best health care in the county that we can possibly have. And going forward, I think that we need to get the spending under control first, and then maybe at some point we can look at the cost. But for right now, we need to get spending under control. We need to consider the sublet center and what the effects might be on the sublet center. And we just need to take care of our folks in Sublet County.
Thank you, Wendy Bowman. Next, Michael Pompey.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to participate in this forum. As we've seen, there are a tremendous number of issues to be considered. I don't have all the answers. I'm willing to research them. I'm willing to try and figure out what it's going to take to improve the district, improve the finances of the district, get us back on track to where we can maintain a high level of medical care that we have had in the past. I intend to work at it and work hard at it to try and get it working.
Thank you, Michael Pompey. And Mandy Norris.
Again, I'm an incumbent for the Sublet County Rural Health Care Board. Having served on the board for the past 4 years, I have a very strong interest in the future of health care in Sublet County. I feel the importance of keeping health care in Sublet County a major priority. I'd also like to say that this takes a lot of hard work, and I'm willing to put forth another 4 years of hard work of saving the Sublet County rural health care.
And thank you, Mandy Norris. And also a big thank you to everybody that helped put this forum on, the Sublet Examiner and the Pinedale Roundup. Thank you to Stephen Crane and Joy Ufford quietly in the background, sorting through all those questions, trying to merge the ones together that can be merged. Way, way in the back, Don Blue. Don, thank you for the food. If you notice, there's a bunch of yum-yums in the back. That's courtesy of Pinedale Online. And again, remember, go to Pinedale Online. Click on that little American flag in the upper right-hand corner. You'll be able to look at all the sample ballots. And if you do have questions about where to vote and you're new to the area, call the county clerk's office. It'd be in the phone book of Sublet County Clerk, and you'll be able to get some information there. If you're not registered to vote, don't go register. That sounds terrible. Don't go register to vote. The reason being is we're within that 30-day window. And if you were to go register to vote right now, you would not be allowed to vote in the election. But here's the good news. If you go to the polling place, you can register on election day and vote on election day. So, again, if you are new to the area, you're not registered, or you skipped a couple of elections, just simply go to your polling place, register there, bring photo ID, and you should be able to vote. Again, thank you to everybody. Thank you to the radio audience for sending in questions. Thank you for our local audience. This is KPIN Pinedale, and we're going to turn it right back over to our
sound man, Michael Anderson.
You running down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side, me.